Hello and welcome to Argue With Us at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew. And together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are, and it is Season 5, Episode 6.
Indeed it is.
What is our topic today, Drew?
We have been to see Us, which is Jordan Peele's new film, which you've definitely seen advertised and heard about and possibly read about, although if you're anything like us, you will have been avoiding all kind of pre-release stuff. We wanted to go in blind for this film after, like, I guess because Get Out was so good and had such a really kind of good reveal moment, I didn't want anything spoiled before I went in.
Yeah. I don't think I had anything spoiled by Get Out. In Get Out either.
No, I didn't either, but...
I suppose, yeah, it was like the first thing, so yeah, there was less expectation, I suppose.
Yeah.
Of that than there was this one.
Mm-hmm.
Us. Jordan Peele declared on Twitter, Us is a horror film.
Yes.
So he made that clear. It's funny with Jordan Peele, though. I feel like his films are horrors that, you know, people who say, oh, I can't watch horror, I feel like he could probably watch their films because they're not sort of gratuitous.
My dad doesn't like horror films, so I tried to get him to watch Get Out and he just point blank refused. So,
oh, really?
that was disappointing, but yeah, I think he could have handled it.
Yeah, because they're not terrifying, you know, on a surface level. They're just more cerebral, so I think... Yeah, I think they're ones that people could give a go, even if they're not into horror.
Yeah, I think this. I think Us is definitely more kind of visual horror than Get Out was. There's definitely a lot more slasher film in it.
Yeah, there's a lot more blood used. More blood bags were used.
And there are no like there are no terrible jump scares. There's no just unearned scares like that. But there are jump scares and you know, tension release moments in it.
Yeah.
Which is cool, and they've done really well, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if we start with our overall thumbs. I just really liked it. It's been... I've just had to think about it a lot. I mean, I know I came out and I liked it, but then I was like... I went on Letterboxd and I just sort of added it as, you know, like dated it, but haven't rated it yet.
Yeah, I saw that and I completely understood. I was like, yeah, I had trouble coming up with a star rating as well.
but I definitely recommend it though. As like, it's a real gets you thinking film. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the same thing. For one thing, it's a really good horror, just in general. It's got this really interesting, cool premise, which plays out in a really interesting and visually interesting way. And so you could enjoy it just, like, even if you weren't sitting there sort of examining the themes and figuring out what it was saying, you could enjoy it on its own as a straight up just kind of scary, fun slasher film.
Yeah.
But then there's lots of... It's full of ideas. It's full of different things to think about. In contrast with Get Out, which was kind of had a main thrust, this is kind of a lot of things, and it leaves a lot of the interpretation up to the person watching, I think.
And
that's also really cool because we were walking back from the cinema, kind of unpicking it and unpacking it and seeing what we thought of it, and it stuck with me for days afterwards. So.
Yeah, me too. Just like sort of throwing ideas out. It's like, oh, maybe it means this, or maybe well, not means this, but you know, maybe that's to do with this or whatever.
Yes.
But yeah, so should we go into a little sort of pre-see of the main story?
Yeah.
I think it kind of it starts with the flashback, which is 1986, and we're watching an old-fashioned TV, and there's this advert for a sort of charity event thing called Hands Across America, which I'm sure to American audiences, as we were saying this on the way home, weren't we? It was like, sure, to American audiences that resonates much more strongly than it does with us. I'm aware of that thing, and you know that that advert, but yeah. I'm not sure what it means culturally, like, you know, how, if people saw it as hokey, whether it was successful, you know, it was kind of, I don't know, but that is the sort of thing that it leads with. And also it starts with this note on screen about there being hundreds or thousands of tunnels underneath America, sort of abandoned mines and things like that. So that kind of sets the scene. And then we have this flashback in the 80s, and it's at not a theme park, a sort of, what do you call it, like a fun fair type thing on the beach. And it's just, it's that classic American sort of summer movie kind of feel. It's like an average family, although they're a black family, they're presented as an average family just out on their summer evening, having fun, two parents with a kid. And the little girl wanders off into a sort of a whole house of mirrors type thing. What was it called? Because it becomes Merlin's thing. It's the Shaman's Journey or something like that.
Yeah,
isn't
it's
it?
It's themed like a vision quest.
Yeah. And so she wanders through this hall of mirrors, and she comes across her double, as opposed to her reflection. It's her double, which we don't see immediately in that flashback, but that it becomes apparent that that's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they've got the identical hairstyles. I guess you don't see that their faces are, you don't see specifically that they're doubles, but it's heavily implied because, you know.
Yeah, but I didn't know if, because I didn't know how full on horror, what sort of horror this was going to be. I didn't know if it had the face of a demon,
turn around and just horrifying.
Yeah, exactly. We don't see that. We just see her face and her eyes widen, and we're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And then she's in therapy.
Yes.
So, do you want to take on the sort of second?
Yeah. So, after that, there is that therapy session where they're discussing what's happened, and it's implied that she's become quite emotionless since the event. She's struggling with PTSD, and then we come forward to present day. Yeah, and that is continued with, so this is Lupita Nyong'o's character Adelaide Wilson, who is the matriarch of a family of four who are going out to go on holiday in like a cabin, which
they've got their summer house, don't they?
And then a lot of kind of the first act of the film is just exploring the kind of nature of this family, because they're all very distinct personalities. They're all kind of interesting, especially Lupita Nyong'o, who is like, she, it's clearly kind of a, it's a loving relationship, it's a loving family, but she is, you can, just from the off, you can see that she's still damaged from this event that happened to her when she was a kid, and that is a source of a lot of tension. It reminded me a lot of Hereditary, which we also did an episode on. Mm-hmm. It's less extreme than that. That film got into some extremely kind of dark places, but that was what it called to mind for me.
Yeah, just as you were describing it, then that was the first time I'd kind of made that connection.
Yeah.
So it's just basically a summer holiday and then becomes a kind of classic house invasion kind of thing. Yeah, so it's sort of a bit Last House on the Left type thing, except for the key premise of us, you know, like who the invaders are is the main thing, which at this stage, we are going to put a spoiler wall down because we want to kind of get into the nitty gritty. But at this stage, so it's basically framed as average American family on a summer holiday and some people invade their house.
Yeah, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that it's the main sort of advertising premise of the movie. They are invaded by a family of doppelgangers.
Oh, is that like in the trailer?
Yeah, no.
Okay, so like I literally saw the teaser poster that was on Jordan Peele's Twitter, and I haven't been actively avoiding it, but I just happened to not see anything else.
Yeah.
And so that's all I knew, and that was like barely told us anything at all apart from Lupita Nyong'o's in it.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how much we can say at all. I'm okay. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I don't think that's a spoiler. It's present in the title, isn't it? And I think that I did watch the trailer. That was the one thing I did watch. I didn't watch anything. I didn't read anything about it for sort of fear of ruining the experience for myself, because mm-hmm. I'm just broken by being a movie watcher in 2019 with all this Marvel stuff. I'm just pathologically afraid of spoilers like a vampire. Yeah, I know, it's terrible. I'm awful. I watched the trailer, and you know, it's explicit. I think it does that line which is in the film where one of the family goes, "They're us." And
okay.
And the film is called Us, so it's kind of
But Us could be us in a number. I don't think that gives away that it's doppelgangers.
No, I'm not suggesting that you definitely sort of figure it out from there, but it's not shy about what it's doing.
Okay, so on to the cast.
Yeah, which they're all amazing. So
that pretty much sums up. It's a really good cast. So obviously Lupita Nyong'o, and then her husband is Winston Duke, who you'll know best as M'Baku. I didn't know he was in it, and I was like, yay! And then Elizabeth Moss is in it, and she's freaking amazing, but then she's Elizabeth Moss, so she's going to be, but she's just really good in it. And then
I didn't know who she was either. I'd never seen her in anything. I looked up Mad Men,
Top of the Lake, and just loads of stuff. Yeah, you need to watch more stuff with Elizabeth Moss. She's amazing.
Yeah, I was looking through her like filmography list, and I was like, she seems to have been in every big thing which I haven't seen. She's like chosen all of the things that slipped through the cracks of my kind of TV watching to be in.
Oh, right, yeah, like in terms of TV. Yeah, because she was in Handmaid's Tale as well. Yep, she was perfect for that, but I can only do one season of that. and then who's the white dad?
The white dad is Tim Heidecker, people mostly know him from Tim and Eric, which is a Comedy Central, it's Adult Swim, I think. They did a show called Tim and Eric's Awesome Show, Great Job, which is kind of, it's a sketch show which sort of parodies low-budget public access television, and it's very weird, very unique, very good. I constantly sort of go back to YouTube and watch all my favorite clips from that show. Mm-hmm. In this, he's playing a less kind of outlandish character. He is kind of a archetypal rich white smug dad.
Yeah, he is. He's
he does
definitely
such a good
that.
Job with it. He's got the perfect expressions.
Right. Yeah. He's got like the bigger car. His boat's better, his house is, just like everything. Because, both families are middle class American families, which is significant that, this is a black family, but they're an all American family. They're obviously pretty successful, but the white family is more successful. Yes. They're more comfortable. And they were just great, irritating characters who mm-hmm. didn't even seem to like each other.
No.
You kind of wondered why they hung out with them.
Because
their kids don't like each other.
And there's that really cool... we're still talking about the cast. We'll talk about the plot stuff later, but yeah.
Yeah. And then the other key one is Yahya Abdul-Mateen, who plays the father in the flashbacks, and he played Cadillac in The Get Down, and he was awesome in that he was just like really stand out in a standout show full of standout performances. But yeah, I'm really happy to see him in other stuff. He's just like, I mean, it's a small part, but he was still quite, you don't really see his face because I suppose you're just kind of seeing the parents from the child's perspective. Mm-hmm. So quite often his head is cut off and it's just him from his shoulders down. Yeah. And you know, he's kind of that caring dad who's just sort of barely competent kind of thing. He's a bit self-concerned, which is how she wanders off. And he's still quite, you can tell he's quite a strong presence for her.
Mm.
She looks to her dad more than her mum in that scene, or in those scenes, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. She seems like, even before the kind of event that triggers her PTSD, she seems like a very kind of quiet and emotionless
closed
child.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does. She doesn't speak.
Yeah. No, she doesn't. No, not at all in that first scene.
No. Yeah. No. Yeah, and then what about the kids? The kids of the Lupita Nyong'o's kids. I thought they were great.
Yeah, they really were. I don't know if I've seen them in anything else. I don't think I have. But so you've got the young boy Jason, I think his name was.
Yeah.
He's kind of like he wears a mask all the time. Mm-hmm. He has a Halloween mask which he wears in his head and kind of pulls it down when he wants to hide, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also kind of obsessed with this like little magic trick which doesn't work, and he spends most of the first half of the movie trying to get it to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really made explicit what that magic trick is or does.
No.
Yeah. It's,
but yeah, he reminds me of my cousin Drew.
Okay.
My cousin Drew was obsessed with Freddy Krueger when he was a kid. He was obsessed with Freddy Krueger. That's what he like dressed up as at Halloween and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
wow.
Yeah, he kind of reminded me of him, just like this goofy kid.
That's cool. He definitely felt very well drawn and real.
Yeah,
can definitely imagine kids like that. Like, I don't know any kids. He didn't remind me of anyone I knew, but it still seemed very familiar.
Yeah, and then the daughter is called Zora, and she was the sort of, I don't know, 13-year-old older sister who was just sort of like rolling her eyes at her family, but without being that kind of obnoxious, precocious kid that you often see in American films.
Yeah, she's
just,
not Corey Feldman.
Yeah, where she's not like overtly kind of just obnoxious for the sake of it. She's just like wanting to be in her own space.
Yes.
But yeah, they were all really good. And then there were the twins who, like all the other people I didn't know. So the white family have twin daughters who are kind of that obnoxious.
Yeah. they don't get as much sort of, the film doesn't bother kind of filling in the personality.
Drawing them.
They are caricatures and, horrible, mean white girls.
Yeah, they are.
Which they do really well, and you instantly hate them.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, oh, your brother's so weird.
Yeah, they are. They're horrible. And then they finish each other's sentences, and they do that weird, freaky twin thing. And they're not nice to her. So, so that's the cast. And I suppose the interesting thing with the cast is they all have to play two characters.
And I
suppose if we talk about the performances, Lupita Nyong'o has, the biggest part to play there. And she's just, like, fantastic.
She really is. Like, there's such a huge distinction between her playing mm-hmm. Adelaide and playing the doppelganger, like just in the way they move, in the way they walk. Mm-hmm. Like there's this really great moment where early on where she's introduced, where she just walks down a set of steps, and the way she does it is so visually striking. And it's a really subtle thing. She just kind of crosses one leg over the other as she's coming down, but it's very balletic and very kind of considered and upright, and she just looks amazing, and it differentiates the character immediately in a way that gives you a huge insight into her personality.
Because the character was a ballet dancer.
So, and then you've got so the dad's name is Gabe. He has a double as well, who is a much kind of larger, more he's not physically larger because he's the same person, but he's a much more present and kind of violent guy. He's like, he gets up in your face. And where sort of Gabe is very kind of loquacious and sort of talks a lot, and he's very manipulative in his words in a kind of fun way. There are lots of scenes in the beginning where he's very eloquent and able to sort of get his way by talking someone in circles. And then his doppelganger doesn't speak in words, he just shouts.
Yeah, he's an oaf, isn't he? Yeah, yes, so he's kind of the opposite of him. Yeah, he's that sort of looming physical presence of a black man, which Gabe doesn't represent.
No.
Gabe is soft and loving and warm and funny.
What kind of interesting is that the different kind of doppelgangers, they mirror the main cast in kind of different ways. It's not like if one character does this and the other character will do the opposite, but for another character it will be that. So it kind of explores the different kinds of duality.
Yes, that's true, yeah.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah, they have kind of different powers.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Jason, the young boy, his double, rather than being kind of an opposite of him, is sort of an exaggerated, much more kind of psychotic version of him. They seem to be like the same person. They're not opposites.
They like mirror each other's movements sometimes as well.
And the last one is Zora, I guess. Again, she's more of an exaggeration than an opposite. She takes that kind of wise-ass 13-year-old
thing
and turns it into this kind of grinning, superior smugness.
She's sort of leering, sort of menace, doesn't she? Yeah. Anything else with the performances before? Spoiler-free performances?
No, I don't think so. I think we've gone through it. Unless you have anything else to say.
No, I don't think so. Not without, before we get into sort of themes and stuff like that. They were great. It was one of the things we were talking about on the way home, though, was the sort of the family dynamic and the lack of communication. Because there's this scene where Lupita Nyong'o tells, you know, they've got two kids and one of them looks like she's about 13 years old, so they've been together for a while, and she's never mentioned this childhood trauma. He seems to be like completely trying to brush it off in his affable way. And we just thought that was a little bit strange. I know it was kind of weird because they never really communicate as a family. There's this scene where they're babbling around a table, but they're not really saying anything. Yeah. And sometimes it is just kind of phased out, like rhubarb noises. We're just out of earshot. There is a lack of communication. I don't know if that's something that Jordan Peele's trying to communicate.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely, like, it's definitely purposeful. There's definitely a deliberate sort of tension and separation that's being drawn between each member of the family. It was then in that specific scene where he finds out that she had this, like, traumatic event. Like, it didn't make sense to me that he would never have asked about that, because it informs her personality to such a huge extent that it was, like, it was difficult to imagine the relationship getting to the loving level that it has without him investigating that and without her telling him that she had this horrible thing.
Yeah, so, because, like, it's, you know, like, even the kids know there's a thing, because, you know, the son wanders off to go to the toilet on, not, it sounds like he's going to, like, take a shit on the beach. Because I always say to go to the toilet on the beach. They're at the beach, and he takes himself off to go to the toilets. And she has, you know, a freak out and is like, where is he? And there's the whole sort of, like, Jaws thing.
Yeah.
And she, the sister, says, oh, way to freak out mom. So, you know, the kids know there's a thing, but I can't believe, like, the parents or the, you know, the, this husband and wife haven't talked about, you know, her thing, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, when you're a kid, you kind of rationalize your parents' weirdnesses as normal, don't you? It's only in, like, retrospect in later life that you figure out, you start spotting the cracks in the paintwork.
But these kids know that their mother is traumatized.
You think?
I didn't interpret it that way. Yeah, I think so, because otherwise they would have internalized her silence and they wouldn't be so average.
That's true.
If they didn't understand that she was going through something, they'd be weird kids.
I mean, they are kind of weird kids, aren't they? Certainly Jason's a little bit odd. And
like I say, he's just like my cousin. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's just like kind of just like goofy. I'm sure he'll just grow up to be.
But there's also the scene where they're around the table and the girl Zora, she's given up on like her track and field career, and they try to get it out of her why, and she won't give a reason. She's kind of very, so she just I can't remember what that she actually says. But it struck me that, okay, this is something that she's inherited from Lupita Nyong'o's character.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think for the most part, like, the tension and the quirks that are written into the family dynamic work really well. For me, it was kind of just that one scene that stretched it to the point of unbelievable for me.
Yeah, I mean, all it needed was her saying, okay, so you know how blah 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 I have this thing with well, it all started,
yeah,
that's or, all it yeah, needed, like, for him to know that,
yeah. Or it could have been that she told him like the broad strokes of it and not filled in the detail, or yeah, she said, like, I wasn't really telling the truth about this before, this is what actually happened.
Yeah It just needed to sort of fill in that they'd had conversations about this before. Yeah, that was the only part. But otherwise, otherwise I really liked that, you know, you're like totally behind them. And I really loved the fact that this is a, you know, a black family representing just an average American family. The fact that they're black has no real bearing on anything that happens to them in the film. And yeah, I loved that. It was great.
Yeah, that was something we were talking about this briefly before the podcast, is that because I didn't really watch much, I didn't read around this film before I went to see it, I was kind of expecting it to be a direct follow-up to Get Out. So Get Out is very explicitly about a specific kind of element of the black experience and race relations. I was expecting something similar in this. Not necessarily the exact same thing, but I came in thinking, okay, I was watching for like the race metaphor in kind of specific. And there are some early scenes, the one that sticks in my mind was on the beach. There's there's a shot where it cuts to the black family sitting next to the white family, and then it's a shot of some birds, and it's four brown birds in the midst of a flock of white seagulls. So, I only just spotted it. It's really kind of subtle in the way it's done, but it's definitely specifically there because it's four of them, and they're like the same kind of sizes. Like relative sizes to each other as a black family. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, this is definitely what it's going to be. This is a film about, you know, black people being surrounded by white people again. So I spent the rest of the film not the rest of the film, but certainly the rest of the first couple of acts thinking, okay, how is that relevant to this? And then it kind of turns out that it isn't. Like, this is not a film about it's a film with stuff about race in it, but it's not a film about race. The underlying thing is not a racial thing.
Yeah.
And so that was the one thing I wish I had read before I went into this film, because I wasted so much time.
Energy.
Yeah, like, trying to assign meanings to stuff which just weren't really there. Which is interesting, because the stuff that it does do, the stuff that is actual meaning, is very kind of subtle and very, it's not explicit. That's the other thing that really separates it from Get Out, is that it's not making a really specific, clear point. It is making a lot of points and allowing you to kind of interpret it on your own terms, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are sort of subtle points to race. The fact that he's obviously gone to Howard University, he's wearing a Howard University shirt. The fact that their daughter is called Zora, which is after Zora Neale Hurston, who is a really significant chronicler of African American folklore, and she's a novelist and stuff. So there are things in there, and the fact that the kid has, in the flashback, she has a Thriller t-shirt on as opposed to Star Wars or Ghostbusters or whatever. Yes. So there are little nods in there, which are really cool. But yeah, like you say, it's like much more subtly this time around. So should we, what's next up? Oh yeah, we'd like, where it sits in sort of horror, we were going to look at some of the references. So I suppose we'll start with, like, from the beginning, like the very first thing that made me extremely happy is that the bit at the fun fair, it just reminded me of The Lost Boys, which is one of my favorite films of all time ever, which kind of changed my life, which is not overstating it. Like, The Lost Boys changed everything. There was before The Lost Boys and after The Lost Boys. Yeah. And so that whole scene in the fun fair was just like, I was just like, oh, this is cool. This is like The Lost Boys. It looks like they're on the boardwalk, and the whole soundtrack, the screams of people on the rides is like total Lost Boys again. And the characters that she sees kind of skulking is completely People Estrange, seen from The Lost Boys. And I really loved that, and I enjoyed that a lot. And then it turns out that the beach is actually Santa Cruz, which is the beach that stood in for Santa Carla, which is the Lost Boys beach, the sort of famous Lost Boys beach. So yeah, I really loved that he sort of making nods to sort of all the entire horror spectrum, because Lost Boys is, you know, a comedy horror, and, you know, sort of very sort of pop culture horror. And then he goes through to the birds, you know, there's the birds on the beach, and Jaws, obviously, the son is called Jason, which I thought, and wears a mask. And yeah, there's just loads of little things like that. The twins, which are, you know, is that of, you know, sort of the Shining.
Yep.
And yeah, I just thought it was really nice the way he was making that, and it didn't do the Stranger Things thing of like banging you around the head with it. It was it was there if you wanted to see it and enjoy it. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. We were sort of talking before that a lot of that stuff always tends to kind of pass me by. I have to look out. I often have to have reference pointed out to me, but So with this, I didn't see a lot of that, which I think is a testament to how kind of out of the way and not Stranger Things it is.
Yeah, Stranger Things, exactly.
I can't get away from spotting the references.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh, okay, this is.
I get it.
Yeah, this is the aliens bit. And this is that. Yeah. But yeah, I really enjoyed that just because it set up the whole mood. Yeah, and the sort of like running through, it wasn't suburbia exactly, but you know, it was a bit Halloween-esque, that
yes,
running through the night with like those massive American houses with huge lawns, so that even like running up to knock on someone's door is like epic when you're being chased by a serial killer. So yeah, everything's so big and wide open. Yeah, it was cool. So yeah, I enjoyed that. And we've talked a bit about where we think it sits in terms of what kind of horror it is.
Sorry, in what sense?
Well, we did a little bit about how we were saying that it's, you know, doesn't rely on jump scares, and this is more overtly gory and visceral than yeah. Get Out, but still, like, I think it treads a subtle line of horror. Yeah. It is clearly horror, but it's not horrific.
Yeah, it's never gore or horror for the sake of horror.
No.
Like, especially when it gets into like the really violent stuff, and there are some really kind of viscerally violent scenes in this.
Mm-hmm.
When they happen, it's often played not directly for laughs, but it is in the middle of a slightly comic scene. It's never super tense.
It's true. Yeah.
When it happens, you're not supposed to be sitting there freaked out by it. You're supposed to be kind of not eye rolling, but you're seeing it from a detached perspective.
Like yeah. That. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. It's cool. Are we spoiler warning yet?
I think at this point we should. We are. We're okay. Away into this episode, so.
Yeah, we are. We've been talking about this for a long time. Okay, yeah. Let's crack on then.
Okay, so from here on out, we're going to spoil everything about us. So if you haven't seen it, we do recommend it. I don't want to speak for you, but I certainly recommend it, and I think
yeah.
you do too.
Mm-hmm.
It's well worth going to see in the cinema. Go out, do that now. Come back and resume listening.
So we're gonna sort of like dig into some of the themes and stuff like that, basically.
Yes.
Which requires us to sort of dive into plot points.
I think we need to talk about The Tethered then, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. You do that.
Okay, so as it transpires, everyone has one of these doppelgangers. It's not just the kind of it's not just Lupita Nyong'o's family who are being chased by a specific set of villains. As the film plays out, it turns out that these things have been appearing everywhere for everyone and murdering their doubles, essentially, in something that Lupita Nyong'o's double refers to as the untethering. So it's talked about at the end of the film that these are characters who have lived in like the underworld. They've lived in the tunnels and in the abandoned underground facilities of the world, and they are kind of tied to their doubles in like everything that happens to their doubles on the surface happens to them below in kind of a very direct way. So you see them kind of, there's a panning shot through one of these tunnels where you see from the beginning of the film the carnival scene, and they are doing the stuff that the people above are doing at the carnival. So they're throwing stuff at invisible coconut shies, or you know, playing invisible whack-a-mole.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially one of them has kind of broken free of this and decided to train the tether to rise up and take the places of the above ground people. I think that's a decent summary. Does that work?
Yeah, that's basically it. So yeah, it's kind of like a revenge film.
Yeah, and so this, like, I think this is kind of the main thing that this is the main theme that you're supposed to be thinking about when you come out of us. It's not direct in what it's trying to say, but like I read it as kind of for everyone who is affluent, they are affluent because they are kind of consciously or not abusing someone who is, you know, on the lower end of the spectrum. So it's like, yeah. So I read it as like a satire of affluence and richness and, you know, American excess.
Yeah, the sort of haves and haves not, have nots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because I suppose on the surface that's between the Wilsons, you know, the black family are have nots by any stretch of the imagination. No. But, you know, there is a difference, a marked difference in the affluence of the white family.
Yeah.
That their house is like super Frank Lloyd Wright, like glass box.
Exactly. Like,
perfect to get killed in. design a dream house.
Exactly, yeah. It's a display case for murders.
Right, it is.
Yeah. When they're on the beach scene in the beginning, like they're sitting side by side, they're all on the same sun lounges, and they are presented as being kind of on an equal social level, mm-hmm. and then they go away, and the white family is completely not. It's like their house is their cabin is like two three stories high, it has a robot assistant. That was a really interesting sort of thing, presenting them like on the surface, like when they get together, they treat each other as equals, or the white family kind of treat the black family as equals.
Yeah.
And then just, no.
Yeah, they've got like the bigger house, car, everything. So it kind of plays with themes. It was only when I got home, it was me being a bit slow on the uptake, and I was putting a hashtag for us in. That it comes up as US is, and then reading what Jordan Peele is saying, you know, because, you know, that's one thing Jordan Peele does is he makes very deliberately American horror films. He's always talking about the American experience. Its double is US, so it's talking about America, and you know then there's the thing about, you know, America's need for a monster, and then what if you look in the mirror and the monster is you, that we shouldn't always be looking outwards for the people to fear. It plays really interesting with that whole theme. Yeah, so I suppose we talk about the ending and how we feel about the ending in terms of that kind of... So seeing as it's the spoiler wall is down now, so in the end, Lupita Nyong'o's, I don't know what her double is called. Is she called Red or something?
She is called Red, yes.
Yeah. Sort of explains the whole thing. We've been down here all this time and we met when we were children and you could have taken me with you, but instead you ran away and now it's my turn. She's going to leave Lupita downstairs and she's going to go upstairs. And then we see Lupita or Adelaide kill Red.
Mm-hmm.
But then the twist at the end is that both Jason and Adelaide are actually Red and Pluto.
Mm. Okay, well, I got that for Adelaide, but not Jason.
Oh, yeah.
At what point was Jason switched?
Because he got taken, he got kidnapped down to the tunnels.
Oh, yeah, he was, but he wasn't the same. He gets kidnapped at the end.
He doesn't have that one dies in the fire.
Yeah, yes. Oh. And, like, he had a burn face. So, yeah, I don't think that's the... Yeah, that's not the same guy.
So what's with the look, then?
The way I read that was that Jason knows. Jason knows that Lupita Nyong'o's character...
And he's just fine with it.
Well, no, he's not generally fine. He's like, he looks at her like he's worried, and then he pulls the mask down and hides.
I was that a worried look?
Yeah.
I completely misread his look.
Yeah. Yeah, like, because I came out wondering, well, does he know or doesn't he know? He's looking at her suspiciously.
Yeah.
And I wondered if Red had told him that she
what
was...
What she was going to do.
Or that the one above was the double.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean. Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm just like getting confused just thinking about it.
But the explicit thing is that Adelaide, Lupita Nyong'o's character, the one who lived above, has kind of been the double all along.
Yeah.
Which is why sort of the underground one was able to break free of it. Like, and kind of rally the tethered into sort of rebelling and coming up. Because, like, again, one of the things is they, when they come up, they replicate Hands Across America,
mm-hmm.
Which is a really odd kind of, again, it's something that Americans aren't really familiar with, non-Americans aren't really familiar with. And also, like, the target demographic of this film, which I guess is going to be the 18 to 35 demographic mainly, mm-hmm. they're not going to be familiar with it either because it happened in, like, 1984.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you need to be specifically familiar with it to kind of understand it. What I sort of read that they were going for was, like, that by tethering themselves to each other, so, like, the underclass getting together and sort of unionizing, I guess, is the way that they can defeat the tethering to the, you know, the above ground people. Mm-hmm. But also by murdering them. So it's kind of a mixed
So, murdering works too.
So essentially, I think the themes are eat the rich and unionize.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that kind of like pans well with today's crowd. So, mm-hmm. I think there are, you know, sort of definite sort of parallels with the sort of prisoner underclass, and you know the idea of who's the prisoner and the jailer, mm-hmm. and you know the sort of demonizing of you know Black and Latino people, and imprisoning them because they wear boiler suits, and for most of the sort of action portion of the film, Lupita Nyong'o is shackled. She has handcuffs on. So, you know, you can't really put a black person in chains on film and not have that be...
It's just a random crazy coincidence. You're just reading too much into that.
You are reaching now. So I thought it was interesting that the person in chains, the black person in chains, was the hero.
Yeah.
And, you know, had the most agency and drive.
Mm.
And then turned out... Oh, God, so who's dead now? Oh, yeah, and then... Oh, God, it's such a mind melt. And then turned out to be from the underclass. Yeah.
I'll be honest, the... I felt like the reveal at the end that she turned out to be the tethered didn't work as well for me. I didn't think it really added anything to the kind of the thrust or metaphor of the film, because it doesn't really change anything that she's done previously. It's not clear whether she remembers or not that she's the tethered, because she never kind of does anything that mentions it or is informed by it. And we were talking about this on the way back from the film, was when, in the like very first scene where she's at the psychologist's office as a child, they say, oh, she's traumatized, she's got a flat affect now, she's, you know, she's changed quite significantly. I thought, okay, well, the twist here is going to be that she turns out to be the double. She's going to be like the monster or whatever it is,
which
is what I thought they were at the time. And then the film spent a long time, like, going out of its way to try and convince me otherwise.
Yeah.
And then to do that so heavily, and then, you know, try to throw the train onto the other tracks at the end, felt to me like I was being misled in kind of an unfair way.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it doesn't overshadow the film. I just thought the final twist was kind of not unnecessary, because it did need something like that to close on.
Yeah,
but it
yeah.
just felt it didn't quite land for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same, but for different reasons. It's basically because whoever's on the surface, we're kind of rooting for them to stay on the surface.
Yeah.
So even if it's the double, you know, we understand that it's not good to be the underclass.
Yeah.
And so you want whoever's managed to make it out of the underclass to stay there. And, you know, so it does, like, even though she's the double, we're not like, we should have, you know, so I feel, you know, we should have been rooting for the other person because she's evil, but she's still been the sort of mother who's raised those two kids and, you know, has a loving husband. So there's nothing to resent her for other than the fact that she killed the other person. Yeah, so it kind of doesn't work, so you're left in this, but then maybe that's what he wants. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that theme in general works really well. It's like the fact that there's no real, apart from the people who created the tethered, which is kind of just, like, they're not involved in the film. They are just, this is what happened. They're the US government, basically.
So, yeah.
So read into that what's obviously there. There's no real people you need to, apart from the white family, I guess, that you need to root against. There's no real villains.
No.
They're all kind of equally fucked by the system. It is the government and the powers that be that are profiting off this, and they're the bad guys, but they don't really appear in the film.
Yeah, it's the structure that is wrong, not the people who are being made victims of that structure.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think it works as a whole piece, in that you come out thinking about that stuff, and it's a really kind of interesting conversation to have. It's just like really, it's in the plot. It's in the moment that it doesn't quite work, and you hit sort of a mental kind of. I've already used the train metaphor, so I don't want to say that it jumps the tracks, but that's kind of what it did for me.
But it's still kind of. Yeah, it's still satisfying though. I don't know what I'm trying to say there.
No. Oh, okay.
I really liked it, and it made me think a lot. And I think he manages to tie all these themes together really well and really succinctly, considering like how complex those themes are, and, you know, like making the all-American horror film it's pretty amazing kind of thing.
The fact that the plot doesn't perfectly fit together, doesn't round itself off perfectly, is maybe a good thing, because there is no ultimate answer to this.
Well, that's it, exactly. It kind of still fits with the theme, even, is that, you know, it's difficult and complicated, and there is no neat bow to, like, stick onto this system, because it's fucked. there are no winners, ultimately, in this. And then I quickly want to say that I loved the bit when we discover that everyone's got a doppelganger, and the white family's doppelgangers come for them and, like, wipe them out. And, like, they're, like, squabbling amongst each other, and she's, like, trying to get the husband to go look at the noise or whatever, and then they just get annihilated in their beautiful glass box with, like, beautiful blood splashes up there, sort of, you know, like, gorgeous, like, white walls and stuff, in, like, 10 seconds they're just, like, over. They're so incompetent. It was brilliant.
I really liked Tim Heidecker's white dad's double, Like, yeah. He had just this, like, he's only there briefly. He doesn't get a huge amount of screen time. But he does this, like, pose with his arms when he, like, meets the Black Dead, where it's like, welcome to Casa D, you know, white guy.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so perfectly done, and it's the funniest moment in the film for me. And it is a film full of, like, it's not a comedy, but it's a film full of funny moments.
Yeah, it is. It does have humor. And yeah, he's wearing this big kind of cardigan thing, so he looks like the dude from so which is the epitome of the white guy, kind of like relaxed white guy, except he's about to like kill them all.
Like, and they go and have a fight on his massive boat, which is called like Biatch, like with yacht, you know, the word yacht. It's so good.
It's good. Yeah. And that is us, I think.
Yeah, I think
that was them. This is us.
Yeah.
We loved it. Go and see it.
Yeah.
Well, if you stayed this long, you've already seen it anyway. So,
one would hope.
I think it's like an instantly iconic horror film.
Yeah.
Like the whole Hands Across America thing, and the boiler suits and the sandals, and her like white outfit with the blood on it, and yeah, just, and the scissors, and yeah.
Yeah, like it's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. Really enjoyed it.
And talking about it on this podcast and sort of going deeper into it, I think since, like, when I started this podcast, I didn't like it as much as I do now. I think my opinion has improved now that we've explored it a bit, to the point where I think I probably like this as much as Get Out, where I didn't quite like it as much as Get Out before.
Okay, yeah, I think I like it as much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, I came out of it thinking, okay, it wasn't as... It wouldn't be as iconic as Get Out. And I think probably in the grand scheme of things, it won't be. I think Get Out was way more notable and way more of kind of a cultural kind of thing, a cultural touch point. I don't think this is so much, but having kind of explored it and analyzed it, I think it is just as good.
Yes, yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, it's just as thought-provoking and kind of layered.
Yes.
It's just like, oh, it's just so refreshing to have good horror back in the world.
Yep.
It's so good. And it's definitely a horror you can rewatch, which is just the beauty of his films.
Yeah.
Is, you know, and like all the best horror films, you can rewatch them because there's more to them than just like the jump scares and, you know, whatever it may be. The sort of exciting deaths or whatever. So cool. Us. We loved it.
We did. Both of us.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. We're gonna, let's not say us again. Okay. That's all from Argue the Toss.
Yeah.
I didn't say it. Until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.